and welcome back to another episode of Blush. I'm your host, Hiva, and I'm so excited for this episode. Honestly, this episode is the exact podcast episode that I always wish existed, but no one's made it so far, and that's probably because, like, it's kind of cringe, let's be real. It's kind of cringy. You know, most people probably have a little bit too much pride and self-esteem to make a podcast episode like this, but I am not burdened by those constraints, so let's fucking go. So the idea of this episode actually came from, you know, Meghan Markle launched her latest project, what is it called? American Riviera Orchard. And they just came out with jam. I believe it's strawberry jam, which we love that. Love strawberries. Really love strawberries. Like, I really have a lot of strawberry recipes in the pipeline because I fuck with strawberries hard. Like, anything like kind of like a creamy strawberry, like a strawberry milkshake. Hello, a McDonald's strawberry milkshake. Can't be beat. Any sort of, oof, I make this really good creamy strawberry frozen dessert situations that is quite literally one of the best things I've ever tasted. Actually, that reminds me, all of the recipes, all my recipes are available to Blush Academy members now, but that's one that I forgot to type up. I'm going to go type it up as soon as I'm done recording because, like, you guys have to make this shit. It's so fucking good. Okay. Where was I going with this? Oh, American Riviera Orchard. Of course, of course. By the way, tangent number two, two and two, you know, like people with like kids will be like two under two or whatever. Like in the valley right now, there's that couple. I think it's Nia and it's not Jesse, right? Jesse is the angry one who's married to Michelle. Yeah, I don't know what Nia's husband is called. But they have the toddler and then they have the baby twins. And he constantly is like, three under two, three under two, three under two. Like, dude, we get it. You have a lot of fucking kids, okay? Like, use a condom next time, okay? I understand that the consequences suck, but I thus far have been very responsible and not had three children under the age of two all at the same time. And I don't really see why I need to be burdened by your mistakes, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, where were we on this? American Riviera. Okay. Oh, yeah. Tangents. Two under two, right? Two tangents in under 2 minutes. We love that for us. Okay. I got really curious, like, what differentiates an orchard from a farm? And then in my research, I came across a third term, a ranch. And I believe this is the difference. I believe a farm is kind of an umbrella term. And farms, by the way, Sam's, there's a crack in the door, is like 2 inches big. And Sam has managed to get just the tip of her snout in, but not the entire snout. And she's using that to try to wiggle the door open so she can. Sam, do you want to, if you can finesse the door open, you can come in. I've given up on trying to corral this dog. Okay, it is what it is. She's 13. We are where we are. Farm. Okay, farm is an umbrella term. A farm has crops. An orchard has fruit bearing trees. Now, what differentiates a crop from a tree? That I couldn't tell you. And I come from an agricultural family, so that's kind of concerning. And then a ranch, I believe, has animals. But I think a ranch and an orchard are types of farms. Okay, she's gotten the door a little bit further open. Oh my God. Oh, she's really doing it. She's really, you pretty much have got it, Sam. You got it. You made it this far. I mean, this bitch could rule the world if you motivated her enough. You'd have to like provide a lot of treats, but I think she would do a very good job. Like, get some beef liver in the pipeline and this bitch could do anything you want her to, you know? Like, look out, Biden, someone's coming for your job. We just need the White House to really stock some, you know what you really like? Some ostrich thigh tendon. Yeah, though, if the White House can just stock that, like, we have the solution to our political crisis. anyway, so I was listening to a podcast this week and they were talking about Meghan Markle's American Riviera Orchard project, which also is really a mouthful. And I'm like a very kind of marble mouthed kind of person. Okay, like, Sam, is this really so hard? Okay, I'm going to open the door for her because it's getting like kind of chaotic over there.
Hello?
Hello, podcast special guest. God, we need a camera situated where it can pick her up because, like, there's nothing as cute in the world as her in general. But when she comes in the room, like, one time I was recording someone else's podcast and she came in the room and looked at me and I came so close to being like, so sorry, I really can't record, my dog wants to play. Okay. Anyway, so I'm listening to this podcast and they're talking about ARO. I'm not saying it again. Like, what the fuck, Meghan? Like, I'm sorry. Like, clearly you have enunciation privilege because you decide to come up with business names that are out of control. Anyway, so maybe in 14 years we'll be done with this episode. I don't know at this rate. There could be a whole nother stampede of animals that come through. Anyway, so when they were talking about ARO on the podcast and the jam and stuff, the pod host was like, you know, it's kind of giving Tig. Now, if you might remember, Meghan Markle had a blog before she married. She's married to Harry, right? God, like, this is how disconnected I am from royalty. Like, this is how far I am from being royal. Like, I don't even know their fucking names. So she's married to Harry and William is married to Kate. It would be so embarrassing if I was wrong about that. Okay. So, she was like, yeah, it's giving to, oh, okay, yeah, yeah. So she had that blog Tig before she got married to Harry. And it was like a lifestyle-y kind of blog, right? I didn't know about it at the time. I didn't even find out about it until when she was engaged to Harry. And everyone was like, yeah, and she has to shut down Tig. And I was like, why? And they were like, because she's becoming a royal. And I was like, oh, this sounds fucking awful. And here we are a few years later, and it turns out it was fucking awful. Anyway, this is not just a podcast about how I'm right all the time, although we should do a show about that, because one thing that was a huge thing for me as a kid was I felt like I was always right and I wasn't getting recognition for how right I always was. Anyway, so when they were talking about it on the show and she's like, yeah, Tig stands for the It Girl. That's where the name of her blog came from. And I was like, holy shit, I never knew that. And it makes me like her so much more because it's pretty intense to call your own blog the It Girl. Like, the implication is that you think that you're an It Girl. And I love that confidence. Like, that's fucking sick. Like, I'm here for it. I'll fuck with that all day, every day. Now, I was doing some research and I've not been able to find any sort of corroboration that Tig stands for the It Girl. In fact, what I have found is that Tig stands for her, it's short for Tignanello, I assume is how this is pronounced, but I have no fucking clue. I just made that up. Like, everyone who speaks Italian is like throwing their phones out the window right now. So you're welcome, Apple. But apparently that's her favorite kind of, I believe it's a red wine. Don't even know that. So disconnected from society. But here's the thing. Hearing that, it got me spinning because I realized my whole fixation in life, quite frankly, has been with It Girls. Like, growing up, I would become so fascinated and fixated by It Girls, like Cher Horowitz, like Blair Waldorf, like, oh my God, Rachel Green from Friends, you know, like all the It Girls. Like, I would sit and watch and study these It Girls and be like, okay, like, so Rachel, like I'm not exaggerating when I say shit like this. Like, I would watch and be like, oh, Rachel's afraid of eye drops, so I should be afraid of eye drops because, like, Rachel's such an It Girl and I want to be an It Girl. So, like, I'd adopt these personality traits. like specifically niche personality traits of fictional characters in an attempt to be an it girl. And of course, like, that's not how you become an it girl. It's not like you just pretend to be someone who's cool and that makes you cool. And quite frankly, that's the opposite of cool, but we're going to get to that in a little bit. But in, like, once my wheels got spinning, I really started thinking about, like, okay, what actually makes an it girl? And then I had this weird flashback, and I remember January 1st of this year at 6 a.m., I sat on my computer because I was in bed by, like, 9 p.m. because I've been dealing with shit with my dog, and so I didn't go out. I didn't do anything on New Year's Eve. I literally walked my dog, went to bed, woke up at 6 a.m., walked my dog, and then got on my computer and started working like any other fucking day. And I wrote this post about what blush means. Like, when I say blush, what does it mean? Where did it come from? Because blush is more than a show about dating. Blush is more than a show about food or nutrition or gut health. It's more than anxious attachment. It's more than chronic constipation. It's an energy. It's a whole vibe. It's a whole energy. And those are all subsects of it, and everything we talk about is in service of this energy. So I printed out parts of what I wrote on January 1st, 2024 at approximately 6 a.m. And I wanted to read you some subsects of it. I came up with the name Blush for a show in 2019. Don't love the grammatical structure of that sentence, but we're just going to let that go. I wanted to start a YouTube channel. I initially thought podcast, but I wanted video too. Funny how tech/the world changed. Called Blush, where I would talk to people about things that make us blush. The things that make us excited, happy, angry, sad, elated, embarrassed, shameful, horny, and so on. I was fascinated by human behavior, connection, and living the life of my dreams. And I was obsessed with talking about the difficult things that would help us reach our dream life. And I thought Blush was the perfect name for this because these conversations, well, they make us blush. Our dream life is usually on the other side. Sam, okay, sorry, she was really inside of an obstacle course with like lights and cords and tech stuff, but we're okay and she has left the room. Our dream life is usually on the other side of our limiting beliefs. You know where limiting beliefs come from? From pain and shame. You know what it takes to work through them, to share these shameful and embarrassing experiences. You know what this causes? It causes us to blush. The premise of the show was to have these conversations that are often taboo and to normalize them. And then later in the post, I came up with, what's it called? Oh my God, what's it called when you take a word and the first, or the letters of the word? No, I'm done. I'm done talking for today. I think that's all I managed. No. When you take, okay, I can explain it in reverse better. But if you take like four words and the first letter of the four words make another word. Now, what's it called when you do the reverse of that? So that's what I did with blush, where I came up with words. So like for B of blush, it's balanced. For L of blush, it's likable. I'm saying this in the worst way possible. U of blush is unforgettable. The S of blush is secure. And the H of blush is hopeful. Okay, but I'm going to read you the description. So for balanced, this is like what a blush girly is. And I use feminine pronouns because I think there should only be feminine pronouns. Now, you know what's funny? My parents accidentally use male pronouns constantly. And the other day, my dad and Ozzy were FaceTiming. And after the FaceTime, Ozzy was like, he kept referring to Sam as a he. Like, does he not know that she's a she? Like, what is that? And I was like, oh, no, it's a thing that you see elder Iranian people do a lot, because in Persian, we actually don't have gendered pronouns at all. Like, all pronouns are the same, which imagine how much easier our lives would be right now if that was the case. And so when they're just like translating to English in their heads, they're just using the first pronoun that they learned, and that's why they do it. Yeah, I think we should just have one pronoun. It would be easier. And we could use the neutral pronoun, or we could just use feminine, because I just feel like as women we've suffered enough, and there are little ways that we can take our power back, and this is one of them. Anyway, so I'm using female pronouns really only for that reason. Okay, so this is what a blush girly is. She's balanced. She works out and eats well, but also might swear and watch trash TV. She wakes up early and gets going on her goals, but occasionally might party late. She's self-aware and mindful, but also gives herself grace when her inner demons come out. She's wellness, but not preachy about it. She's aspirational, yet relatable. L is for likable. She works through her triggers, her limiting beliefs, and her insecurities so that she doesn't project them onto other people. She knows when to agree and when to speak her mind. She's socially aware. She listens and is interested in other people. She doesn't speak too much because she isn't insecure and doesn't need to prove herself. She's diplomatic rather than exclusive and lovable rather than popular. She radiates love and light onto others, not in a cringy spiritual bypass kind of way, but in a way that someone who is radically self-aware and integrated can do. Because she knows that everything that she reacts to in the world points to her own unresolved pain, shame, and trauma, and she addresses it and integrates it. A blush girly is unforgettable. She's sparkly in a way that's authentic to her, and she shines her light in a way that her soul came to this planet to do. She knows what her special sauce is. She doesn't try to fit into a mold of what a likable person should be. Rather, she radiates in her own authentic way. She does not hide, conceal, or bury herself. She shows up in the world. She radiates. She shines. She sparkles. A blush girly is secure. She has a strong nervous system. She's confident and securely attached. She can easily regulate her emotions. She doesn't fly off the handle, and she doesn't regularly have emotional breakdowns. She isn't high strung or difficult or unstable because she has a regulated nervous system and worked through her attachment wounds. She's stable. She's internally validated. She's her own buoy. And a blush girly is hopeful. She has an optimistic outlook on life and knows that she creates her own luck. She's empowered. She's constantly learning both about the world and the information that she needs to reach her goals and about herself. She knows she has the tools and resources within her to make anything she wants happen, and she creates her own magic. Don't we love that for us? Anyway, so I really got thinking, and I got thinking about this blush energy and my whole fixation with it girls and my, you know, like, I want to be a blush girly. Like, I want to be an it girl. Like, who doesn't want to be an it girl? Like, can we just all admit to ourselves that we want to be the it girl, right? Like, we all fucking do. And so I studied some of our favorite it girls, and I looked at what they all have in common, and I was like, okay, how can we now try to embrace that energy? How can we all become it girls? And I think the first thing that we really have to do is to address our gut health. And this is a funny one because, like, let's call a spade, hot girls all have gut issues, right? Like, right? Like, that's a common unifying trait of hot girls, right? Now, I do feel like an imposter in the hot girl scene because I was so ugly growing up. Like, hot girls have gut issues, right? But here's why I say it. Having good gut health is the easiest way to set yourself up for becoming an quote-unquote it girl. Like, it is the easiest way to have glowy, radiant skin. It's the easiest way to be able to manage your body weight. It's the easiest way to be able to manage your emotions. It's the easiest way to be in a good mood. It's the easiest way to be really motivated and passionate and productive and be successful. And I get DMs about this literally constantly, like multiple times a day. I get DMs from people who were like, oh my God, I started, you know, making your recipes or following your advice, or from, you know, listeners or Blush Academy members who were like, holy shit, I did the nervous system course and, you know, my bowels are so much regular and now X, Y, and Z is happening. And I collected a few of them just from a cursory glance to read to you. What you've been sharing has been game changing for my digestive health. Since I've been trying your recipes, my mood, mental, and physical health have improved so much. I've never tried this diet before, but it is just amazing. Your brownie recipe has set the bar for desserts. It's actually my favorite dessert recipe I've ever tried, but what I love even more is that they make me poop. I now have a bit every day, and I have perfect poops every day. I didn't realize how much the constipation has been weighing me down. Now that I'm regular, my skin is glowing, I feel happier, and I've just been more pleasant. And this isn't just limited to constipation. It actually goes with all kinds of gut issues. I had this really good friend, Piper, and Piper has a child, but this was several years ago. Piper's kid was like 3-ish, I want to say. I'm not great with child ages, I'm not going to lie to you, but like, it was before he went to school, but like, he was definitely not a baby, you know, like I think like an elder toddler. And I remember she would constantly talk to me about how she's like, I don't know how to parent him anymore. Like, I've had enough. Like, he's so defiant. Like, she said, like, she would say something to him and he would like look her in the eyes and say no, which I think is really funny. Like, I was like, maybe we have a comedian in the training, because there's something so funny about that to me, like, for a parent to say something to a child and a child of that age to be like, nah, like, really good idea, I really appreciate the effort, but I have my own ideas on this. Like, that's so funny. But I can appreciate how that would be annoying if it's your kid and it's happening to you. But like, other little things, like, he's so defiant, like, he just like wouldn't listen, and she would then lose her shit and she's like, I feel so bad, like, I can't control myself, I end up like so angry that I yell, which I never want to do. And I just want to say, mothers, like, don't be so hard on yourselves. Like, you guys are fucking human beings and you're dealing with the most. Like, I'm not saying you should yell at your kid all the time. Obviously, the goal is to not yell and, you know, to be calm and all those things. But like, we all have a breaking point and we all snap sometimes. And like, if you yell, you yell. It's not that big of a deal. The most important thing is to later address it and apologize for it and explain. Like, they'll get it, you know? So long as you're modeling repair, you're really not going to traumatize your child. It's the problem is that most families where there's a lot of fighting, there's zero repair modeled for the child. But that's neither here nor there. Anyway, so she's like, his behavior is just so out of control and so defiant and so stubborn and like this and that. And I don't know what to do about it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not like a child rearing specialist, so I don't know either. And then a few weeks later, she was like, the way that there has been a total 180 in this child's behavior. And I was like, what? Like, what happened? And so apparently she put him on some kind of like gut cleanse protocol. Like, oh my God. Oh, Sam is back and she brought a toy this time.
What's that in your eye?
Oh my God, you guys, I like literally was about to take her to the hospital because I thought there was like bright red in her eye, but what it actually is a backdrop for like food photography that I have in the corner of this room. And it was reflecting in her eyeballs, but that was really scary. I was like, holy shit. I'm reading a book. I don't want to say what book it is because I'm towards the end of the book, and so I don't want to spoil anything, but there are these like Vernon, I think it's like a mythological creature in the book, and they have these like crazy red eyeballs. So yeah, it reminded me of that. Anyway, so she's like, complete 180 change in his personality. Like, he's so sweet, so docile, like so calm and gentle. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna need you to give a very specific play-by-play breakdown of what the fuck you gave to this child, because what I wouldn't give to do a gut cleanse and then come out of it on the other side being sweet, docile, and gentle. Like, what my entire family wouldn't give for that to happen. Like, the way I think Ozzy would Ozzy would pay someone $1 million to give me some kind of pill that makes me sweet, gentle, and docile. I'm just kidding. No, but in all seriousness, it makes a lot of sense because up to 90% of our neurotransmitters are actually produced in the gut. So I think for serotonin, it's 90%. And then for dopamine, norepinephrine, and GABA, those are also, like, a lot of those are produced in the gut too, but not quite 90%. But either way, those neurotransmitters are really what's responsible for our mood, our behavior, our stress response, things like that. And when there's an imbalance in our gut microbiome, or when there's a blockage from constipation or things like that, it really interferes with the production of those neurotransmitters. Plus, like, other things like skin, like that's a really kind of basic, obvious one. There's a lot of things going on, but one of the main ones is the fact that when we poop, we eliminate toxins from our body in our poop. Like, that's how they leave the body, right? There's this influencer who I follow, I can't remember her name right now, and she always uses this analogy that I like, which she's like, you know, people do all these like internal cleanses, and it's like cleaning your house and putting all the garbage in garbage bags, and that's fucking amazing, but you have to take the garbage bags out of the house. If you just leave them in the house, you're not going to be feeling better at the end of it. And it's the same thing with constipation. Like, you got to get it out of your fucking body, you know? And so a lot of the reason why people have acne is because those toxins aren't leaving the body through the bowels. And if they're not leaving the body through the bowels, they're going to leave the body another way. And one of the main filtration systems that we have in our body is through the skin. So it erupts into acne. Like, another big thing, I think, with gut issues is when you are suffering from any kind of gut issue, quite frankly, it takes over your life in a way. Like, think about, like, a really obvious accessible example is diarrhea. If you have chronic diarrhea, you're kind of tethered to the toilet. Like, you're not going to want to go too far from the toilet, you know? When you have chronic constipation, like, A, you feel like shit all the time, but in a weird way, like, you're so delusionally optimistic that you're going to poop at any time that you also are weirdly tethered to the toilet. And if you have other kinds of gut issues, like intestinal permeability, or if you have, you know, imbalances in your gut microbiome or things like that, you tend to get really, really bloated, and that makes it really hard to get dressed and do things. Like, no matter what the gut issue is, it's this weight in your life. And if you can get rid of these gut issues, it's such a sense of instant freedom. It's such instant lightness, like instant feeling better, instant looking better, instant being able to fit into your clothes, instant feeling better about yourself, instant wanting to be seen, instant wanting to be present in the world. All of these things happen instantly, I guess is what I'm saying. No, the fuck is my point? My point is, like, it gives you such a sense of freedom. So even though I really do think a lot of hot girls have gut issues, so I'm not saying, like, hot girls, like one thing that it girls have in common is they have perfect gut health. No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, if you want to be an it girl, addressing your gut health is gonna make it a lot easier for you to actually get. Okay, so this is why you're not allowed in the studio, Sam. Hold on, guys. She moved a fucking light as she was stumbling out of here, so I just have to make sure it's not blocking the view of the camera now. Okay, sorry about that interruption. Okay, so here, no, you are not going to open this door again. We've been through enough this episode, okay? We had this whole weird 3-2 moment in the beginning. It was just awkward. Anyway, so here are 5 steps that you can take to improve your gut health. Obviously, this is me really dwindling it down. We can do a full episode on gut health at another point in time. This isn't that point in time. Okay, so the first thing is to eat fiber. It's kind of basic. I feel like I talk about this constantly, but you know, fiber does a lot of things. Fiber feeds the beneficial bacteria in your gut, which improves the diversity and the depth of your gut microbiome. Fiber bulks up stool and absorbs water to lubricate the bowels so you can properly eliminate. Fiber also binds with toxins to help move it out of the body. But you do want to go very low and slow with increasing your fiber intake. I say increase by like 3 to 5 grams every 2 to 3 days is a good way to move forward. Number two is adequate hydration. This is so fucking important. And when I say adequate hydration, I don't mean plain drinking water. When you drink plain drinking water, you pee it out. That's it. When you drink mineral-rich fluids, it actually absorbs into your cells. I'll give you an example. If I were to drink 2 cups of water, I would run to the bathroom immediately when I was done with the second cup. I drank 2 whole coconuts, like big ass coconuts, like the water out of 2 whole big ass coconuts a while before coming to record the podcast. I'm yet to have the urge to pee. I'm sure I will by the end, but it's because that coconut water has so many minerals in it that it's actually penetrating the cells. It's actually hydrating the colon. It's not just flushing right out of me via pee. And that's what you want. That's how you actually hydrate and lubricate the colon so that it can help move things out. Number three, you want to be consuming probiotics, whether that's in supplement form or in food form via fermented vegetables and the like. Whatever route you want to choose, that's fine. If you have SIBO, like if you, one potential sign of SIBO is that you become bloated immediately after eating, like immediately, like no break, and your bloating tends to be above the belly button. That tends to be a good sign that you have SIBO, although it's not dispositive. But if you do have some kind of like bad bacterial overgrowth situation, you might respond really well to a spore-based probiotic versus other types. You know, I like to play around with probiotics. I'm currently taking the Organic Olivia brand. It seems fine. I've taken Just Thrive. It seemed fine. I took the Symbiotica one, which I liked. And I've taken Seed, which is like super research-backed if you want to use that one. I think my code is HIWA15. I'm not 100% sure, but you know, you could just like eat tons of fermented vegetables and things of the sort too. And then you want to eat a lot of foods that are rich in prebiotic fiber. And that's because that prebiotic fiber feeds the beneficial bacteria in the gut. I have a list of prebiotic fiber foods that you can eat at the end in our Foods That Make You Blush segment. And you want to address intestinal permeability. See, this is what I mean about marble mouth. Like, this is why I can't say American Riviera Orchard. It's like red leather, yellow leather. I should just do this for an hour. You know, one time I was laying next to Ozzy in bed. He was watching a YouTube video where this guy was just like counting. Like, he's like 1,110, 1,111, 1,112, 1,113, 1,001. And this went on for so long. I was like listening and I was like, is that guy just like counting? And it keeps going and I like kept ignoring it. Finally, I was like, hey. And he's like, yeah. I was like, why are you watching a YouTube video of someone counting? Like, are you, like, is this an educational tool for you? Are you just not sure how numbers work? Or what precisely is the deal? reveal. I believe it was Mr. Beast. This was before I knew who Mr. Beast was. If you don't know who Mr. Beast is, we don't have time, okay? I've gone on too many tangents, and Sam is trying to break down the door of the studio now to get back in. And, like, Sam, you lost that privilege when you tripped over all of the lights and moved them, okay? Oh, my God, she's gotten her nose back in. This is so... You know, I need to set up a camera from this angle and interject with it sometimes, because, like, you guys are missing what I get. Wow, she's really opening the door. Like, what? Like, is there food in this room? Because, like, she's not usually this motivated to do things for things other than food. Sam, you can't just keep coming in and out. Like, we're... Oh, I can't. Okay, I'm going to open the door again. Sorry.
Yeah, just keep doing this. And careful with the light. Hi.
Hello? Oh, my love. Do you want to... Should we set you up with a mic? Do you have something to contribute to this conversation? Okay, so you want to address intestinal permeability, which kind of manifests as, like, quote unquote, food sensitivities. And really the best ways I found for doing that truly are supplements, specifically glutamine and zinc. With the glutamine, you want a macrodose. So we're talking like 40 grams a day, which is an insane amount of glutamine, but it really fucking works for rebuilding that gut lining. Okay. The second way that you can channel your inner it girl is by getting in control of your emotions. Now, the first time I really became really aware of this was via a real life it girl that I met. And Sam, she's being so cute. I can't. So it's this girl, Danny, that I worked with. When I was in college, actually, when I was interning somewhere. And she was, like, pretty young. She was, you know, attractive, but not, like, you know, she wasn't, like, Kendall Jenner or anything. And I only add this because I just think it's important that, like, I think that if you're just ask a layperson, like, oh, like, what makes an it girl? Or, like, how can you become an it girl? They'll be, like, stylish, attractive, you know, skinny, blonde, blue hair, tall, or whatever. But I don't think that that's necessarily true at all. Like, yes, is there pretty privilege? Of course. Is there thin privilege? Of course. Is there white privilege? Of course. Is there blonde privilege in many settings? Sure, probably in some settings. I think being blonde is a disadvantage too, but that's, you know, we're not we're not gonna get into this discussion. Nevertheless, I think that being an it girl is so much broader than that. So anytime in this episode that I talk about someone, like, not being that attractive by, like, conventional societal standards, I don't mean it as, like, in this, like, cunty, bitchy, like, oh, she wasn't even hot kind of way. I just mean to illustrate, like, I want, like, for those of you out there who were like, yeah, but, like, it's easy for you to say because, like, whatever, but, like, I'll never be there because, like, I'm not pretty. Like, A, you're wrong. You are. But B, you can be an it girl without meeting the conventional beauty standards that, like, permeate society today. Is all I'm saying. So Danny, cute girl, but, like, you know, definitely no, like, Kendall Jenner or anything. But she was, like, the most popular girl at this organization. Everyone was obsessed with her. She rose in the ranks quite quickly. And she just had this, like, energy about her. Like, she was just fucking cool. Like, she was just, you just wanted to be around her. Like, she just, like, she just exuded this je ne sais quoi. And I was always like, what the fuck is it about her? Because I couldn't quite put my finger on it until one day I realized what it was. She had a very water off of a duck's back kind of energy. No matter what happened, she was never that rattled. She always, like, even if, like, really intense, stressful things happened, and it's not like, I mean, you know, we worked together in a very passionate environment, and like there were a lot of events and there would be things that would pop up last minute. So it's not that I never saw her stressed. It's that even when she was stressed, she tended to have this like kind of like cool energy about her. But the bigger thing is that the vast majority, like most things wouldn't rattle her. Most things she could just kind of take in stride, and it was really fucking cool. Contra, I have two really good examples of people who were like the exact opposite. One, I think, is Kat from this season of Below Deck. She was on the first few episodes. So if you don't watch Below Deck or you're like not even familiar with it, it's a show on Bravo that follows the crew on chartered super yachts. It's this whole world that I quite frankly knew like nothing about. And the cast tends to be a little bit different every season, or like mostly different. And this season, there is this stewardess named Kat who actually is incredibly attractive by conventional beauty standards. Like tall, thin, blonde girl, super sweet, seems super smart, had a very fascinating life story. Yet she really could not, like, she was like the opposite of the it girl. She left the season already, but she was quite frankly, like, truly the opposite of an it girl. Like, she really didn't hit it off with anyone, wasn't able to get close to anyone on board, which is weird because she had such a lovely personality. Like, I wanted to hang out with her. I wanted to befriend her. But you know what really stood in her way is that she had zero control of herself. Like day one that they started work, she already was like sitting around and crying, and she would just get like overwhelmed so easily and just fly off the handle. Not like in an angry, you know, like my God, when I fly off the handle, I'm like angry and yelling at people and like threatening the lives of customer service people on the phone and shit like that. It wasn't in that kind of way that she would fly off the handle. It was more like she would just have these breakdowns and just get really overwhelmed, and it would just all be too much for her. And even though no one on board was like, yeah, I'm not fucking with Kat because she like breaks down all the time, I think it's one of those things that subconsciously affects us. Another example of this is Jax on The Valley right now. Jax from VPR originally, but I think that his behavior right now on The Valley is so much worse than I remember it being on VPR, even though kind of on paper, like it should be better. He's like finally married. He's finally not cheating. He's finally not impregnating girls in Vegas and stuff. But man, he's just so fucking moody. He's so irritable and angry all the time. He just has this like really off-putting disposition, and I actually truly think it's because he probably is depressed. Like, I think he actually has like clinical depression that hasn't been diagnosed. And I know it's not like right to armchair diagnose people, but in this case, like, I think it's really generous of him, because I'm like, what I'm really saying is like, I don't think that he's just an asshole. I think there's a clinical reason why he's behaving so asshole-ish, but it's so fucking off-putting. And I feel so bad for Brittany, because as his partner, Brittany gets dragged down by him all the time, although they are separated now. Like, thank Jesus for her. Like, I just, she deserves better. Like, I hope she can find someone where she doesn't constantly have to like apologize for their behavior, because that's the life that she has right now, which is so sad and so off-putting. But anyway, the reason why someone who's in control of their emotions is so attractive really goes back to the nervous system. In order to be able to maintain control over our emotions, we have to have a very regulated nervous system. And what happens is when people are around each other, our nervous systems affect each other. It's this concept called co-regulation. So when we are around someone whose nervous system is really regulated, it actually regulates our nervous system, and it helps us calm down and get into a state of ease. So we, without even realizing that that's what draws us to them, we are just naturally drawn to people who have that sense of ease, because our bodies are craving it, like the way you would crave Xanax. It's like Xanax and human form. Like, who doesn't love Xanax? Like, it's fun as shit, you know? And on the flip side happens too. When we are around someone who's dysregulated, it dysregulates us. That's why it's so hard. Like, think about the most frantic person that you know, right? For a lot of us, it's our moms. Not even going to say anything, but it's true. For a lot of us, it is our moms. Think about how, and I'm not saying for all of us, okay? Like, I don't know that that would be the case for me. I probably know people that are more frantic than my mom, but I'm just saying for a lot of people, it is their moms. But just think about the most frantic person that you know. Think about how much you don't like being around them. The reason that you don't like being around them is because their nervous system is affecting yours. You are getting dysregulated. They are stress in human form. So which one do you want to be? Do you want to be stress in human form, or do you want to be Xanax in human form? I know what I'd like to be. And here's how you get there. Really, the bulk of it is just the basics. You want to be sleeping enough. You want to be exercising. You want to eat right. You want to meditate. Like, it's all the boring, non-sexy stuff that you know you have to do, but that really is the crux of it, right? There's a lot of like little hacks and things out there, you know, like pull on your earlobe and look to the left and click your tongue, and that'll reset your nervous system. And yeah, there's validity to some of it. You know, I'm like doing a ton of research on the vagus nerve, and there's everyone and their fucking mothers has like a hack for tapping into your vagus nerve. And yeah, some of them work, but like, you know what really works? It's the basics. It's doing the basic rudimentary things. You know, there's all these like weird shit they sell now, like these tools for activating the vagus nerve. Do they work? I don't fucking know. I mean, I don't know. I'd imagine some of them work to some effect. But again, you know what really works? Sleeping enough. That really works really fucking well. And it doesn't cost $4 million. So I'm just saying. Another thing you want to be doing is you want to alternate between doing the challenging things and doing the restorative things. So the challenging things taps into this concept called hormesis, which is basically like a stress vaccine. I was scared to say vaccine because I was scared it would get like flagged by Apple as like being something about, you know, the vaccine for that disease that came out a few years ago, but it's not. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is that when you intentionally expose your body to low doses of stressors, then your body adapts to stress and can handle stress better. And then when you are exposed to unintentional stressors, your body will be like, oh, okay, like I already know what to do because I've experienced this before. Like, it inoculates you against stress. It makes you more resilient. So the ways that you can do that are really hard exercises, like Tabata style exercises, again, for low limited doses. Another way that you could do that is via really active breath work. Like, there's a lot of active breath work modalities in the Blush Academy and the nervous system course, but you know, anything that has you rapidly breathing, like intentional hyperventilation. I think my brain just left the building. We're just going to move on from that thought. Cold exposure is another way. Sauna is another way. You know, when you just intentionally make yourself intentional hyperventilation, right? That's what I want to say. Hyperventilate. Yeah. Yes. No, I don't know. I may have just had a stroke. I don't know. Maybe it's time to go to the hospital. Okay. Anyway, another really fucking important thing is to avoid sugar. And by sugar, I mean any form of glucose that's been stripped of its fiber. So cane sugar is sugar. Corn syrup is sugar. Maple syrup is sugar in my book. Coconut sugar is sugar in my book. Like, anything that's been stripped of its fiber source is sugar. Rice syrup, tapioca syrup, any fucking syrup is sugar. Unless for some reason it still has its fiber in there. Like, date syrup always says that it's made of whole dates and the fiber hasn't been stripped out. But I don't know that I believe it. Anyway, what happens when you consume sugar is that it causes a very rapid increase in our blood sugar. And that rapid increase in blood sugar prompts our body to release insulin to help transport the glucose into the cells for energy. But that rapid increase in insulin then causes our blood sugar to crash. And the blood sugar levels drop to below what they originally were. So they don't just drop to where they were to begin with. They drop to below where they originally were. And that blood sugar crash then causes fatigue, irritability, cravings, tiredness, feeling foggy, all of these things that make it really fucking hard to stay in control of our emotions. On top of that, that blood sugar crash actually releases, or the changes in blood sugar, I should say, prompt the release of stress hormones, specifically cortisol and adrenaline. Cortisol actually helps regulate blood sugar by promoting the breakdown of glycogen stores in the liver and in the muscles. And then the adrenaline increases our heart rate and blood pressure, both of which make us feel stressed, irritable, anxious, angry, all of those fun things, which again make it really fucking hard to regulate your emotions. Another thing for... the fuck did I write? Okay. Holy shit. I could not read that at all. It says W-H-E-N-N-E-G. Weneg. I was like, I'm really, really unfamiliar with that word. So then I thought the two N's might be an M. So I was like, Weneg? Nope. Don't know about that either. But it's actually meant to be two words. But I didn't put an adequate space and then I forgot my own shorthand. So here we are. Okay. But another thing that's really, really helpful is when negative emotions do come up, label those negative emotions. And the reason that you want to do that is because when you label an emotion, you're bringing your prefrontal cortex into the mix. And your prefrontal cortex is the part of your brain that's responsible for logic. And it kind of deactivates the limbic brain, which is the part of your brain that's in control of your emotions. So in other words, when you label the feeling that you're feeling, you're actually prompting your brain to be a little bit more logical. So that's one tool. And then another one that's really helpful is gratitude. We end every episode with a gratitude practice, and it's because it's scientifically proven to make you a happier, more optimistic person, which also helps regulate your emotions. And the other thing is to work through any sort of painful and shameful memories that you have, because a lot of times we get activated, not even because our nervous system is our nervous system gets dysregulated, but the reason it gets dysregulated is because something happens that reminds us of something painful or shameful that's happened to us in the past. And so that then causes the dysregulation, which then causes us to not be able to control our emotions. So when you work through these experiences, then this doesn't happen to you as much. And in the same vein, you also really want to address your attachment wounds, because one of the kind of specific ways that we get stressed and then can't control our emotions is when our attachment system gets activated. So the attachment system is this evolutionary thing that comes about because when we're born, we're completely helpless and we're completely reliant on society and community to keep us alive. So we've evolved to want to be connected to other human beings. And when that connection from human beings is threatened, it activates our attachment system, which then puts us in a state of fight or flight because we think that there's a life or death level danger, which, you know, if you're completely ostracized from society, historically meant a life or death type of threat. And so then we search for ways to reestablish that connection. And that's all well and good. And there are situations that would activate anyone's attachment system. Like if someone that you really, really care about, like full on ignores you, like I actually accidentally did this to a friend. A few months ago, I was going through a really rough time with shit with Sam, and I was like really irritated with her, largely needlessly, I would say. Like, she really kind of became a scapegoat for my pain at the time. But there was something deeper going on with me where I was like triggered by something completely unrelated, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway. So she had kind of like picked up on me feeling some kind of way, and I hadn't communicated with her, not because like I didn't want to, but because I could tell like the excuse that I had in my head was like, oh, I'm so pissed off at her because like she hasn't been checking in on me when I've been going through so much with Sam, right? That's like the kind of like conscious excuse that I was giving. But I could tell that there was something deeper going on because of the way that I was reacting. Like it felt very childish and immature. And for me, whenever I have that type of reaction, I know that there is like a repressed part that's yearning to be seen. And it's not so much about what's going on the surface. So I was trying to figure out exactly what repressed part of mine was being triggered by my friend. And then I was gonna like address it and communicate with her if need be. But like if I just reached out to her and been like, oh, I'm pissed off because like you haven't been checking in because of Sam, then that wouldn't have been entirely true. Like that's kind of the excuse that I was making. So that's why I hadn't reached out to her. Anyway, but at the same time, I also wasn't really talking to her because like she was triggering me so much. Again, unbeknownst to her, it was like really nothing to do with her. It was my own shit and things that I was repressing and suppressing in myself that was causing all of this reaction. Anyway, all this to say, so I had kind of like, we talk mostly on WhatsApp, so I'd hidden her chat just because like anytime I saw her name, it was like triggering me. I was so triggered. Again, really not her fault. And she had messaged me being like, hey, like, is everything okay? I feel like I haven't really heard from you. But I literally just didn't see the message because I had hidden her and it had been days and I didn't respond to her. And she, as you can imagine, like kind of spiraled a little bit. And then later when I did see it and I did respond to her, and we had a whole conversation, she's like, wow, like, I guess I really need to like work on my attachment stuff because like I really spiraled there when I didn't hear from you. And I was like, no, I don't think you need to work on shit. Like that's normal. Like that's like really like that's just an evolutionary thing. You reached out to me. You already were feeling some kind of way because like obviously my energy was weird and different. And then I straight up didn't respond to you for days. Like, no, you should feel anxious. Like that's a normal thing to feel anxious about, right? I just want to highlight that. But there are times where people's attachment system is chronically activated or it's just more easily activated. So these are the people who interpret anything as like a potential end to the situation, right? This is like when I used to have really bad anxious attachment. Like if I didn't hear from a guy like super consistently, even in the early stages of dating, where like you're not really talking that much or you don't need to be talking that much, I would just like full on fucking spiral and lose my mind. And like it was like I couldn't even think about anything else, right? That's what a chronically activated attachment system looks like. And then there are the people who have the activated attachment system or may not even have the activated attachment system, but they're so preoccupied with romance that they don't have the capability of putting up the right boundaries. And that's also very like not it girlish. Like one example of that is Sunny on the current season of Below Deck. So she is a deck, which means she works above the boat, and she has been hooking up with this guy Ben, who's also a deckie. And Sunny doesn't have what I would say like is an overactive attachment system at all. Like the times where she's gotten upset with Ben, I think have been very valid. Like there was one night where I do think he was being really touchy-feely and flirty with another one of the crewmates. Now, they're just friends. And I will say, like, on her part, I don't think she has, like, any interest in him at all. So, like, yeah, for that reason, maybe, like, Sunny overreacted. But I actually kind of don't think she overreacted. I think he was being really disrespectful to her. But, so that's not her issue. I don't think that she overreacts. I think she appropriately reacts. But then it's like she completely forgets all of the things that she was reacting to and continues staying in this relationship with him and continues sleeping with him because she just quite isn't able to, even though like her attachment system is fine, she must have some kind of like preoccupation with romance that doesn't really quite let her put up strong boundaries. So whether you fall in the more like chronically activated attachment system or whether it's the low boundaries or whether it's a combination of the two, you would really, really benefit from attaching. I said attachment so many times, I can't stop saying it now, from addressing your attachment wounds, because your attachment wounds a lot of the time are what's going to make you have reactions that are either like crazy or over the top or just like kind of cringy, you know? Like a good example of this is Danielle from Summer House and Winter House. When she was on Winter House this past season, she was hooking up with this guy, Alex, who was so hot, but so douchey. And Alex would like really aggressively flirt with this other girl in the house. And Danielle would like get pissed and like be really crazy, but then like hook up with him again and then like get pissed and get really crazy. And it just, her behavior for that entire show was so cringy and it was so hard to watch. And it was like really just her attachment wounds. And it's actually funny because Danielle brings us to the last tool that you can use to harness your inner it girl. And that's to not try to be, pretend to be someone that you're not, to not try to be someone that you're not. And Danielle's such a good example of this. So Danielle this season on Summer House is like, comes in with this whole like, I'm single and I'm ready to mingle and I'm getting my mojo back and like, I just want dick and I just want a party and I just want to hook up and like, I'm not interested in guys and I'm so chill, cool and easygoing and like blah blah. And the thing is, every single one of us is watching that and we're sitting there, we're being like, bitch, you know that you want to tomorrow meet someone, fall in love, like fucking move out to the suburbs, like adopt a golden doodle puppy and get a trainer for him. And you want to hire a professional photographer and get shots done and send out Christmas cards. Okay. Like we know that that's the case. And there's nothing wrong with wanting all of those things. Like by all means, want whatever the fuck you want. But what there is something wrong with is wanting all of those things and pretending that you want to be single and out there and mingling and whatever. That comes off cringe. It comes off icky. And like the hottest, most attractive, most it girl quality that you could possibly have is to really be authentic to who you are and not try to pretend to be someone that you're not. I think a really, really, really good example of this is Stassi from Vanderpump Rules. I think so much of Stassi's success in life can actually really be traced back to the fact that she is so authentically herself and she's never pretended to be anyone that she's not. Like she's never had an issue admitting things that are not like conventionally cool, chill, like that likable kind of quality, right? Like she came in season one being like, I'm crazy in relationships, right? Whereas like most girls like myself, like I used to always be like, oh my God, I'm just like so chill and easygoing and just like guys just like don't know what to do with me because like all I want is sex and like I just like don't get attached easily. And literally not one of those things is true, right? Stassi never pretended to be any of those things. Stassi never pretends to like the cool popular music. She never, you know, pretended to be into all the things that all the other girls are into. Like she really made a whole brand out of embracing your basicness, embracing the things about you that like other people think is basic. And that's been her special sauce. That's been her key to success. And it's funny because I think that her castmates had always looked at her and been like, okay, what is Stassi doing? And let me try to emulate it to have Stassi's success, right? So it's like Stassi really took off with the basic branding. And I think Tom Sandoval tried to emulate that by doing the most extra thing. Didn't work out so well for him. Sheena constantly was trying to do everything that Stassi did, but every time Sheena did it, it was cringe. Like Stassi only would follow a certain number of people on Instagram, 0666, but that's neither here nor there. And so then Sheena was like, oh, I'm only going to follow like 420 people on Instagram, because like Sheena had this whole shtick as like a cool stoner chick, right? But it like it never worked because they weren't actually being authentic to themselves. They were trying to just be Stassi. And what's funny is the reason that it worked for Stassi is because she's authentic to herself. Like she wasn't trying to pretend to be anyone else, but that just went right over their heads. Another example of this is this girl I went to college with who was in my sorority, who really was not attractive by conventional beauty standards, like at all. And she's, I'm trying to think of like how to word this in a way that's not mean. She was maybe the coolest girl I've ever met in my entire life. And she was like one of the most popular girls in school, like one of the most well-liked girl. Like all the guys wanted to be friends with her. All the girls wanted to be friends with her or were terrified of her because she was just so fucking cool that she could like annihilate you with a glance. And the thing is, on paper, she had none of the things that an it girl has. Like she didn't have the face, the hair, the body, the clothes, the style. She, you know, she didn't have any of those things. But you know what she did have? She was so authentically herself. She never tried to be anyone that she wasn't. She never tried to like fit in with the other girls. She just was herself. And she got into the coolest sorority, not to brag. It was a really cool sorority. I was not cool. I was like the big fat loser in the sorority, but it was a very cool sorority. And she was the coolest girl in the coolest sorority. She was friends with all the coolest guys. Like she was the fucking it girl. And again, she had not one of the things that you would think of an it girl having, but what she did have was just fire authenticity. She probably had good gut health also. But I'm telling you, it is the fastest, the easiest, the best way to be more likable. I think we see this in Taylor Swift's trajectory too, by the way. I was just listening before I started recording, but I had to stop because I started tearing up and I was like, nope, not the energy that we want. But like, fuck, like Taylor Swift, I truly believe does not get enough recognition for how talented of a lyricist she is. And I know she gets recognition for it, but I don't think she gets nearly enough recognition. Like she truly is a poet. Taylor Swift, I think Taylor Swift has Swift. See, another example of why I can't say American Riviera Orchard. I can't even begin to say it. Anyway, I really do believe that Taylor Swift has always been liked and stuff, but I know that she doesn't feel that way. And certainly there were years where she was clowned on a lot more. And I think that she went through a phase where she was kind of like trying on different things. Like she would like try to dance more at her shows, but like she's not like that good of a dancer, or like she tried slightly different music styles. But when I think that she really became like iconic and just like queen of the world is when she started really leaning into who the fuck she is and like stopped trying to be Beyonce and these other girls and was just like, nah, I'm Taylor and this is who I am. Okay, I'm petty, I hold on to grudges, I sing about scars from 10 years ago ruining men's lives. Like, do you know how hard Jake Gyllenhaal must have it? Like, doesn't he's a New Yorker, he that man can never wear a scarf again. Like he's gonna get pneumonia. Like I'm genuinely worried about his long-term health, and that's all Taylor Swift's doing. And I love that for her. I love that she doesn't even try to get over things. There are two songs on this new album about Kim Kardashian. That should happen to like close to a decade ago at this point. But like, never let it go, Taylor. Never fucking let it go. Although I would love nothing more than for the two of them to do something, because like, let's be real, Kanye was the massive perpetrator of that. And I'm sick of men turning women against each other. Okay. Like, obviously Kim did a lot in that situation, but like, Kim probably made a lot of mistakes in service of being married to Kanye. I mean, it's kind of like Jax and Britney, quite frankly. Like, he dragged her down for so many years. And I think that Kim should apologize to Taylor. And I think that Taylor should take the apology. And I'd like to see them do something together. And if they don't want to do it for themselves, that's fine. If they don't want to do it for all women watching and young girls watching and showing like women supporting each other, that's fine. You know how, why they should do it if none of those things are going to motivate them? They should do it because it would make Kanye go crazy. And if revenge is not the biggest motivator, I don't know what the fuck is. Anyway, there was actually a study at the University of Michigan on dating apps, and they found that women who had profiles that were ranked as being less likable and less attractive by conventional standards actually were approached a lot more. And one of the reasons that they found was all like went down to authenticity. So people were just drawn to like pure authenticity in profiles. Another like last example I want to give of this, because I just like think it's a good example of like what works for one person doesn't work for another. So Paige on Summer House kind of like nags her boyfriend Craig a lot. Like, she'll like make a lot of jokes about him and make fun of him, and like people love it. Like, they think it's so funny and quirky and likable, right? And then Amanda, who's also on Summer House, just did this video with like Elle or Vogue or some magazine, and they were like, oh, some, what are some of your icks about Kyle being her husband? And she's like, well, I hate his mullet and I hate this and I hate that. I actually thought it was funny, but it landed so poorly, and I didn't connect why until when I was listening to Watch What Crappens, which was like my favorite podcast ever. They just recap Bravo shows and they do these voices and it's so fucking funny. Anyway, when they were doing the recap, they addressed this and they were like, the reason it came off so cringy is because like Amanda's just trying to do what Paige does with Craig, but like with Paige, it's authentic to who she is. So it's like lovely and charming and cute and likable. Whereas with Amanda, it's not really authentic to who she is. And so it comes off as like cringy and not likable. And these are both exceptionally hot, attractive women. So it's not like anything, a difference in their looks or anything like that. It's just truly being authentic to who you are. Like, when someone isn't themselves, we can sense it. We can feel it. Like, we can feel the insecurity, like it's insecure energy. But when someone really truly embraces who they truly are on a soul level, it's the ultimate act of authenticity and courage and really confidence. And that's why we can't keep our eyes off of them. I think another really good example of this is Kristen Stewart. So Kristen Stewart, for years, like people were just put off by her. Like, first, when she first came on the scene and did Twilight and stuff, everyone was like fixated, obsessed with her, right? And then people started to kind of turn on her, as we do with women. I mean, CEG Anne Hathaway, we're constantly going back and forth about like whether she's a queen and an icon or if she even like deserves to live. Like, that's how hard we come down on Anne Hathaway. Like, why? Because she's a little cringy, let her be. Anyway, so, you know, everyone started to turn on Kristen Stewart and it was this and it was that, whatever. And then she had this renaissance. And I really think it's because she came out and she just became, I mean, coming out is the ultimate act of authenticity. Like, it's the ultimate fuck you. It's the, not like fuck you in a bad way, but it's the ultimate I'm going to be true to myself. Because keep in mind, up until very, very, very recently, and quite frankly, in a lot of parts of the world, we're still not even there yet, coming out, quite frankly, can be a death sentence. Like, that's how extreme it can be. So to, in the face of that, be like, this is who I am, and I'm no longer going to suppress it and repress it for your comfort, That is the ultimate fucking act of authenticity. And there's nothing more attractive than this. She was recently on the cover of some fashion-y magazine, like maybe Vogue or some shit. And it's the sexiest thing I've ever seen in my life. And it's just because I think she's so authentic to who she is now. And we fucking love that in people. So you're probably like, okay, that's great, bitch, but like, how the fuck do I get there? Here's the thing. We are all born completely confident, completely authentic, completely sure of ourselves. But we are also born completely helpless. And so from the moment that we come onto this planet, we're constantly scanning our environments to find clues as to things that we can do to ensure that our loved ones will continue to love us and will continue to take care of us, because if they don't, then that means that we die. So as a survival mechanism, we're literally scanning our environments and being like, ooh, that person did that and people did not like that, so I will make sure to never fucking do that. Or, ooh, that person did that and people seem to really like that, so I guess I should do that. And you know, like when we do things like, ooh, I did this and people laughed, I'm going to do that again. That seems good. Or I did this and someone got angry. Ooh, maybe I shouldn't do that anymore. You know, we're constantly adapting ourselves to ensure that we will continue to be liked by other people. And it's wild how early this starts. There's an influencer that I follow who has a baby who's like 6-ish months, maybe a tiny bit older than that, but like under a year. And she would do this thing when she first started feeding the baby solid food. So yeah, she's definitely older than 6 months. She would start doing this thing where she'd, I'm sure you've seen people do this, where they'll like it's like she's like helicoptering her food, but then pull it away last second. So she's like going to feed her something, but then pulls it away and then like giggle. And the baby would giggle because everyone else is giggling, whatever. So she'd like fake her out with feeding her, right? And she would do this over and over again. And then something fascinating happened again. This is a child who's well under a year old, okay? Like barely been on this planet, like barely has a brain, like only recently started being able to see colors, okay? This child, when she would started like grabbing food and feeding herself, started doing the same thing. So she'd bring food up to her mouth, but then pull it away and just start dying laughing. And it's not like she actually thinks it's that funny. You know what I mean? She like barely has a brain. Like she barely understands what's happening. But what's happening is she saw the people around her do this and laugh. So she's like, okay, laughing is good. People like laughing. Everyone's in a good mood. Clearly, in human world, they think this is the height of comedy. And so I'm going to start doing it also to then make them laugh and make sure that they like me so they don't like throw me away into a creek of water or some shit. Like I need these bitches to continue taking care of me. So that's what happens. And that example is like a kind of a whatever example. Like, okay, this baby learned to like make this joke to make other people laugh that like maybe wasn't like authentic to her on her soul level, but like it's fine. It's not that big of a deal. But when things happen that cause us to feel any sort of like pain or shame, those really imprint and start chipping away at our authenticity and they really affect our brain. But the good news is just like how those negative events can affect our brain, so can positive effects, right? This is called neuroplasticity. It's the fact that our brain is malleable and we can constantly build new neural pathways and strengthen neural circuits and things like that. So for example, I like one of the things that's chipped away at my authenticity, like I am someone who has tried on so many different personalities. Like I said at the top of this episode, I used to watch all of these it girls in TV shows and movies and stuff and be like, okay, like what do they do? I'll do it. Okay, Rachel Green's afraid of eye drops. I'm afraid of eye drops. You know, Monica loves food. I love food. You know, Cher says as if, I say as if. Blair wears headbands. I wear headbands, right? I was doing all of these things and none of them made me cool or likable or an it girl, because again, you have to actually be authentic to who you are. But the reason that I was constantly trying on all these different personalities is because I had a lot of experiences in my early childhood that really chipped away at that natural confidence that I was born with. And so I didn't feel like I could be myself. I felt like I had to put on different personas. And there were a lot of incidents like this, like, you know, one that's just kind of like top of mind. My first day in German preschool, the very first German words that I learned were "go home, foreigner." And then I proceeded to have a year of not understanding the language. I mean, I picked it up quickly enough, but I constantly felt different and unwelcome, and not like it wasn't like my crazy feelings. The kids were communicating to me on a daily basis that I wasn't welcome and that I should go home. And that type of thing kind of makes you not feel so good about yourself and not feel so sure about yourself, and really makes you feel like you don't belong and you have to be someone else in order to fit in. But the good news is, now as an adult, I can go in and I can use tools from hypnosis to really neutralize the emotional toll of memories like the go home foreigner memory, and implant it with new beliefs and create these new neural pathways and strengthen these new neural pathways of like maybe a childhood experience where I did fit in, where everyone did want me around, where I was accepted, where I did have friends. You see what I mean? Okay, so there we have it. Before we wrap up, we like to end every show with a foods that make you blush segment, where I talk about foods that you can incorporate into your diet this week that have nutrients that support the things that we talked about this episode. So for this week, number one, cacao. Cacao has mood-enhancing compounds like PEA, which stimulates the release of endorphins like dopamine, and theobromine, which is a natural stimulant that elevates mood. Chicory root is the richest source of prebiotic fiber out there. Garlic has prebiotics called fructans. It's also antimicrobial and antifungal, which is like really helpful for any sort of like parasite or candida cleanse, like, you know, Piper did with her toddler child that made him docile and sweet. I eat lots of garlic. I'm yet to be docile and sweet, but we're gonna let that one go. I think I just need to be authentic to who I am, which is a cunt. Anyway, oats. Oats have beta-glucan, which is a type of prebiotic fiber. They're also rich in B vitamins, which support neurotransmitter synthesis and promote myelin formation, which helps with neuroplasticity in our moods and staying regulated and not, you know, losing control of your emotions. Flax and chia seeds are high in omega-3s, which reduce inflammation in the gut and in the brain, and it elevates mood and it enhances neurotransmitter function. Turmeric. Turmeric has an active compound called curcumin, which I feel like I must pronounce wrong because there's a second R in there. It's spelled curcumin, but I say curcumin as though the second R isn't there, because that's just what feels right. But like, how the fuck is it actually pronounced? Anyway, curcumin is super, super, super anti-inflammatory. And anything anti-inflammatory is always going to support your skin, your gut, your nervous system, and your mood. It also can increase brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a protein that is involved in the synthesis. It's a protein that is involved in synaptic plasticity and neuronal growth, which really supports neuroplasticity, and it supports the nervous system as a whole, and it supports, you know, regulating your nervous system, being in a good mood, shit like that. But with turmeric, you always want to make sure to add black pepper, because it enhances the bioavailability of curcumin by 2,000%, which like is really high. So like 100% is one. So 2,000% is a lot. Bananas, especially the more brown they are rich in tryptophan, which is a precursor for serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter that regulates mood, sleep, and appetite, and creates more emotional balance. It also has B6 and magnesium, which is involved in neurotransmitter synthesis and neuronal signaling, and assists with the brain forming new neural connections, aka neuroplasticity. Spinach is rich in folate, which is involved in dopamine and serotonin synthesis, which are neurotransmitters that are necessary for mood regulation. Spinach is also rich in nitrates, which convert to nitric oxide in the body, which helps ensure that there is adequate blood flow to the brain, which is essential for neuronal functioning and promotes neuroplasticity. And the last one is legumes, because they're the richest source of soluble fiber, which is not only great for bowel regularity, it's also really, really great for enhancing your overall digestion and gut health, but also that intense soluble fiber binds with toxins and helps pull it out of the body. And now we get to the end of the show, and we like to end every episode. Sam knows that we're wrapping up. She's stretching as though she's been working so hard. Bitch, what have you done other than sacrifice our entire production here nearly? God, I love you so fucking much. I wish you guys could see the face. We need a backstage shot for the show, is all I'm saying. Anyway, we like to end every episode with gratefuls. And the reason that we do this is because it's scientifically proven to make you a happier, more optimistic person. So I'm going to list three things that I'm grateful for this week. And I invite you, as you're listening, to list three things that you're grateful for this week. But the key really is to list three new things that you're grateful for. So you don't want to just kind of like come up with the most top of mind obvious things that you always think about, right? Like, oh, I'm grateful for my health, my dog, and my apartment, or like shit like that. You want to really cut deep. You want to scan through your day or scan through your week and find three new things to be grateful for. Ooh, okay. My first one is I came across a new kind of melon at a supermarket in Chinatown. It was labeled as a Taiwan muskmelon. I don't know like literally what the fuck that means, but I tried it and I fucking love it. It kind of tastes like a cross between a honeydew and you know those cucumbers, I think they're called Mexican cucumbers, that have the thicker skin and the bigger seeds. Like they're like a normal cucumber that you would see at any normal grocery store, but they're like a little bit thicker and the skin's a little darker green and like less ridgy. And you know, it's really getting really phallic the more I do this, if you're watching on video. So I'm gonna stop. If you're not watching on video, you can surmise. But they have the bigger seeds. So it's kind of like a cross between a honeydew and that. It's really, really fucking good. So I'm grateful for that. I am grateful that the near crisis that I thought was happening when I was looking in Sam's eyes and it was a ball of red wasn't actually her eye and it was just a reflection of the poster board that I use as a food backdrop. Very grateful for that. And oh, Sybil, the demon that I'm carrying, is a lot calmer. So I'm grateful for that. And you know, they say the parasites come out at the full moon. And today, when this episode comes out, is the full moon. So I guess we will find out tonight if I give birth to a little demon or not. Oh, did you guys just hear Sam's little shake? Anyway, so that is the end of the episode. Sam knows she caught up. She's getting ready to leave the room. She can tell from the cadence of my voice that I'm about to wrap up. And I just fucking love that bitch so much. Anyway, you guys, thank you so much for joining me. If it was your first time listening, welcome. If you're a longtime listener, love ya. And if you hated the episode, you know, there are 2 million other podcasts out there. You don't have to leave a negative review. Actually, you know what? Leave a negative review, whatever. Do whatever the fuck you want. But if you did enjoy the episode, I'd really, really, really appreciate it if you could leave a review. It really does help the show so much. And there's only like, so the reviews are broken down by country. So I like, it's not like in the US, there's only like 40 reviews or some shit. And there are a lot more than 40 of you who listen. So if you could just go leave a fucking review, it would mean a lot to me. And if you could share this episode with people you think would benefit from it, I mean, share the love, share the wealth. Like, This is gold content. Come on, guys. No, but seriously, it would mean so much to me. And yeah, I love you guys. We will talk next week. Stay cunty out there, and I will see you next Tuesday. Okay, love ya. Bye.